Hey, podcasters, welcome to another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradol. On today's episode, we're going to have a lot of talk about. It's a little bit unique. There hasn't been a whole lot of news going on in truck world. We just finished Detroit Auto Show, so all the new reveals are out. The SUVs are out. We got them all. There's a couple shows going on, but nothing really truck related. So I'm going to give you a few stories behind the scenes. These are stories that I've sold freelance, because I freelance, to different outlets that I haven't told anybody about. These are secrets. Okay, you got to trust me. You got to contain the excitement. And understand, I'm telling you some secrets, insider secrets, all right? We're going to get to those in a minute. We also have special guest Shelby Hall. She's with the Rod Hall School of Racing. They're in Reno, Nevada. She is the granddaughter of the off-road legend, Rod Hall. You may know him from numerous off-road events he's done and different articles they've done. I realized after the episode was done, I did not mention the website. RodHallDrive.com. RodHallDrive.com. Check it out. It's great corporate events. It's great to go out. These people are amazing. They do off-road racing. As I told you a few weeks ago, I did the Raptor. I did 100 miles an hour in the Raptor. Off-road driving at 100 miles an hour is way different than on a track. Okay, it's a lot more exciting. So we're going to get to that. And then I have a very, very, very sad update for you on Swede. We had some problems. So I'm going to share a little bit what's going on with Swede. If you don't know, it's a 1962 Chevy C10. It's my project truck. It's a grandfather's hand-me-down truck from the farm. It was an old farm truck. And I'll get to that in a little bit, and we'll talk about that. Maybe you can email me in some suggestions. I'm basically crowdsourcing a solution. It's kind of what I'm doing. And just kind of talking through some different ideas. So let's first get to the news. Basically, the only really news is that there's some spy photos out there of a new Ram Heavy Duties. There's a spy photo of a new front end on a Power Wagon that's on TruckTrend.com. There's really nothing much more to the story. Just a bunch of camouflage over the front. Ram hasn't really updated their products in years. I think they're the oldest truck in the market, if I recall. I think the last time they did a truck was 2013. 2012, 2013 was their newest product. That's not that long ago, but with so much energy happening around the truck segment right now, so many new products coming out, it really does seem like a long time. I know that there's plans in the works, and you can read on pickuptrucktalk.com. I talked about the 2018 or 19 Ram 1500. They keep messing around with that timing because they don't really have the money. all right, so my Ram rep's going to call me right now on the phone and argue with me, but they have a long-term plan. There's some stuff going on at the EPA. We talked about last week where the EPA and them are arguing over the emissions. They just got a lot going on, and I don't know what their time frame is looking like. There's still speculation a new Ram will come out at the February Chicago Auto Show happening in a couple weeks, and I will be there on site. I don't know. I think they'd do something in Detroit, personally. Detroit's a bigger show. I doubt that they would do something there, but they may. It's Ram. You know, they may have gotten too busy with reveals in Detroit that they just ran out of time. It's possible, or it's possible we wait another year. It's not a bad truck in the marketplace right now. Don't get me wrong. Not a bad truck. I really enjoy driving it. I really like the styling. Ram knows exterior and interior styling like nobody else in the business. Really sharp looking. However, we're at that point where you're thinking, why isn't something new coming out? And so that's definitely a question. All right, so here we go. Here's the insider gist. All right, here's the insider stories. These stories haven't gone live yet, so I haven't shared them on Facebook or places, and you know, I'm just kind of letting them take time to be published. The first one I'm working on, that I've worked on, I've sold, I've sent, it's going to be published any day now on pickuptrucks.com, which is the cars.com equivalent. I will share links on Pickup Truck Talk as well. In Austin, Texas, there's a company called getburrow.com. Now, think of a burrow, you think of a pack mule, which is basically what it is, right? That's what a burrow is. They are, and this is a whole new segment industry I learned about. I took an entire day learning about this industry. They are basically Uber for trucks. Yes, for trucks. You take your cell phone, you type in, I need to move a couch, and you send it into the app, and the getburrow on their website it downloads that request to a variety of truck drivers that have signed up for them, and they all get the notifications on their cell phone, and then they apply for their job. And within minutes, you'll have a truck outside your house with a driver who's going to help transport your load where you need to go. Now, if you need to move the couch, he may come inside and help you move it, or maybe you and your buddy putting it back in, then you hop in, you drive over, and you help unload it. It's not a moving service per se, but they do move a lot of furniture. It's an exciting different take on trucks. What really got me interested on this discussion was, you know, in the past we've talked about truck hate, and I actually talked about it offline with our special guest. There's in cities, trucks are a problem sometimes. There's lots of traffic, lots of parking, lots of issues, but you still do need them. You know, you live in a loft, you live in a condo, and you go to buy a piece of furniture, you're typically waiting 2-3 weeks to have it delivered because that's the way the store delivery team works. With Gitboro, they're delivering it in less than an hour. So on demand. And I was talking to the owner about it, and he was telling me that they have a local furniture store there that they've helped out that's seen a $1 million increase in their business because it's that quick on demand. They don't have to wait. You don't have to wait for somebody's delivery schedule. I've had furniture delivered before in the past. I don't know if you have too, but if you do delivering furniture in the past and you've had that delivered, you will, I can say that really well, delivered. You will understand that you typically wait 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks to get on their schedule. Well, that kind of kills the excitement, right? Because you just bought this brand new couch and you want the brand new couch now, but now you got to wait 3 weeks. You got to figure out when you're getting rid of the old couch. You may have to live without a couch for a while because you're waiting for the couch to be delivered. It's a 21st century problem, right? It's kind of a pain in the butt, right? It's not a big deal. I mean, but it definitely is something that it's not a fun thing to go through. So Gitboro will do the app. You put your request in, just like Uber works. Truck pulls over and they help you load it up and they take it, you know, and you can do 2x4s. You need to go to the hardware store and you want to build something, but you don't have a truck, you only have a car. You can take plywood, they can take dirt and gravel, things that don't damage trucks. You got to, you know, dirt and bags, stuff like that. And they get a whole list of different things that they will deliver. The list is kind of common sense. No toxic items, right? You don't destroy their truck by something leaking. Gitboro.com. What's interesting in the story that's going to go live is that I did some research and there's a couple of different companies, not just Gitboro, that offer this truck service. And I'm forgetting the names of them because I sent the story off, but there's a couple of them throughout the country and they're basically in major cities, LA, Chicago, Austin. I could see New York City being part of that, you know, equation as far as getting Uber truck service. It allows people that own a truck to have more usefulness out of that truck. You know, I love trucks, but let's be honest, a lot of times you're hauling air. It's just, that's the reality of it. With Gitboro, you could sign up as a driver. They're paying like $35 an hour. You know, yeah, you're sitting around waiting for a job, but if you have a job where you have a couple days off during the week, or you have a couple weekends off, you know, the weekends off, and you're sitting watching TV and all of a sudden your phone buzzes and says, hey, do you want to make $35 in 20 minutes? Let's go. I think I'd go. You know, I think that's a good option for people, especially for truck owners. I think it's a fantastic idea. It's a fantastic way to me, for my thinking, to grow the importance of trucks and their usefulness. And also in urban city environments, it gives the owner another reason to own a truck. Not only do you need it for your own purposes, but you could make some money on the weekends if you had a truck and you lived in LA. I think that's a very important thing. I think it could be a growth segment for companies. You listen to Ford, and Ford always talk about mobility. And what they say, in a decade, more people live in cities than they do in the rural areas in the world now. And it's projected that a handful of cities will have 25-30% of the world's population. I mean, that's what's coming. So there you go. Next time your neighbor in downtown LA gives you crap for owning a truck, you say, hey, I'm with the Gitboro, and I make money on the weekends by signing for this app. So check it out. It's a fun story. It's an interesting story. They've had some legal issues. The Texas Department of Motor Vehicles had an issue with them. They sent some letters out to these companies. Basically, you just want to make sure that everything's on the up and up. It's that niche service, though, between the moving companies that, you know, they really want to move houses, and the furniture companies that can't deliver that fast because they don't have the facilities. They just don't have the infrastructure. It's just not what they're good at. And so you have this middle guy, and this middle guy is easy app, easy thing to get involved with. It's definitely it's a cool idea. So the other story I'm working on. So this is the second one. This is the other secret story. So yeah, I talked to you about Uber for trucks. Talking about cities. Still talking about cities. Do you remember the Checker taxi cabs? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. The big yellow ones that are just a different type of vehicle. They had a big opening rear door, and they really were strong taxi cabs. If you watch older movies from the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, anything that, not those movies filmed then, but anything that talks about that time frame, you'll see these taxis, and they're the Checker Cab Company. They're pretty iconic. I remember them. I remember them from a couple movies I think I saw as a kid. Well, anyways, Checker, they're officially called the Checker Motor Company. They went under the interesting one. The founder or the CEO got caught in the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme. They had the downturn in the economy. They just everything worked against them. So they filed bankruptcy. Well, they brought him back. There's a new owner. He has the Checker taxi cab. He's got the name. He's got all the he bought all the rights, and he's relaunching the company. Well, what's this got to do with trucks? Haha. He's gonna develop. And he's going to build. He's planning it. And he's already got pictures of it. He's already pretty much built it. He's going to build a low volume production. It's a part of a 2015 or 16 bill that allowed a program of low volume production to start again. He's going to build an El Camino-like truck. Yes, an El Camino-like Chevy. It's going to be based on a 1980 Chevy. It's a little bizarre looking, I think. I don't know. It's going to take a little while to get used to. It's a little bit different. It's kind of got the old classic truck look with the El Camino bed. It's an interesting thing. It's going to have a Chevy crate engine because he uses a lot of crate engines in the rest of his restorations. It's part of the, let me pull up the official name for the company because there's a parent company involved in this. And the official name is Adamson Industries Corporation, and it's Steve Conterno. I hope I didn't butcher that too bad. Basically, Adams Industries is an upfitter of police and public safety vehicles nationwide. He's in Massachusetts. He bought the Checker Motor name and got the licensing, got it done, and then he's launching two vehicles. One's a truck, one's another one. It's based on an Aerobus-inspired four-wheel hotel limousine. This thing is long and huge, and it's really cool. it's really a cool looking vehicle. What's great about this his ideas on this pickup, and they call it the Checker Sport pickup. I think there's a name for it. I was trying to find some names for it. Anyways, it's got an crate engine. It's a part of the LS series. It's a V8, flex fuel V8. He's also hopefully going to be able to use a Chevy Colorado's turbo diesel in it, which would be really cool, in a little El Camino looking thing. But what's interesting with this is he's going to build it with all modern off-the-shelf components, right? So he's going to use LED lighting all the way around, but off-the-shelf. Instrument panels going to be off-the-shelf. He's going to have power windows, power locks, all off-the-shelf. Climate control, off-the-shelf. The idea is if he uses all these off-the-shelf components and he builds it, the truck's going to be built on a full steel frame with composite body panels, that he can keep the cost down. That's his plan. Oh, it's also going to come with a first aid kit and onboard air compressor. So I thought that was just kind of different, kind of interesting. Anyways, so the truck's going to be a body on frame. It's going to have a V8. It's going to have a modern powertrain. It's going to be rear wheel drive. It's going to have composite body panels. It's going to have all the latest modern technology, your four wheel disc brakes, all the different things that today's technology has, right? Rack and pinion steering and it's going to have a lot of all those new features. Sorry, I just looked at the article I wrote frack and pinion steering. That's probably not correct. It's going to have rack and pinion steering. It's going to have, it's going to be a really cool looking truck. And it's going to have a decent price point. I think that's a really interesting thing about this whole deal. Is it's going to be in the range of upper 40 to upper 50. That's kind of what he's expecting right now. He may be able to get a little bit lower than that. I don't know. We'll see what happens, or a little bit higher. But when you consider the average price of a truck these days is growing to 35 to 45 to 55, this kind of fits that range. I mean, it's not that different, that outrageous. It's you're paying a lot more because it's a low production, right? They only expect to build like 250 models of this truck each year. So you're talking really low volumes. You can pay a little bit for that. But how cool would that be? You can go in and buy a classic El Camino that looks different than any other truck in the marketplace, right? That's got all the features of a modern truck. It's going to be really strong. It's a V8 engine, full steel frame. I mean, it's going to be really a hardy kind of truck. It's probably gonna be fast off the line. Probably weighs nothing. I mean, that is, it has no weight to it. Plus, it's gonna be all GM parts. So if you need a part for it that broke, you can just go to the AutoZone and get a part. You know, I don't think they'll be in the system. You're not gonna go. I don't think they'll be in this. You know, they'll have to like get the right parts guy to give you the right part for it, right? But yeah, you can literally buy this truck. Is talking late 2018 when it comes to marketplace. I'll make you this guarantee right now. If this truck comes to market, which I feel like it's a good chance it will, if it comes to market and if he's selling it, I'm gonna fly to Massachusetts. I'm gonna fly there and I'm gonna interview this guy. I'm gonna drive this truck around, you know, a little 20-minute test drive, whatever, and I'm gonna check it out. I guarantee you, I will do that because this thing is interesting. And it's different, and I really, really, really am excited about this because you can take somebody can build a truck that they enjoy, that they think other people will enjoy, and they can do a low volume production of it, and you can buy this unique vehicle. You know, in this day and age when everything is starting to look so similar, all these SUVs and trucks look so similar to the front end. I mean, any new truck these days, everybody's like, well, that's the same thing as the F-150. They all look like the F-150, right? All these new trucks coming to the marketplace. Here you can buy a very unique, very classic style truck that doesn't look like anything else, has the El Camino, you know, appeal to it, which is there's a group of people out there who really enjoy that. El Caminos are interesting to me. I'm not sure if I'm really on board with them, but okay. And you can drive this around, and it's all brand new. Turnkey. $40,000. $50,000 probably. But hey, talk about unique. Jay Leno will have one. I guarantee you Jay Leno will have one if they come out with it. So check it out. It's going to be on our Facebook page. I'll put it on the pickuptrucktalk.com. I sent the story in today. Probably be next week till it goes live. That's how my freelance stuff works. And I got to tell you, I have 6 or 7 stories that are just I'm waiting to tell you about that are exciting. So stay tuned for more. Every week I'll tell you some more. Stories come out. I do these different things. I hope you enjoy it. They're unique stories, and I think I enjoy them. So I'm gonna keep telling you about it. we'll be right back with Shelby Hall from Rod Hall Racing again. RodHallDrive.com. That's the site you need to go to. We had a great interview. Had a great time. I went a little bit longer than maybe I had planned. It's longer my interviews, but you know what? It's so good. I don't care. I kept the record button down. All right. So check it out. That'll be coming up next, and then the last part of the segment of the show, we'll talk about Swede. Got some problems with Swede. I'll let you know what's going on. Stay tuned. And we're back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Mr. Dahl. On today's program, we have a very special guest. We have Shelby Hall. She's a granddaughter of off-road racing icon, I think legend, Rod Hall. She works at a company called Rod Hall Drive. They're in Reno, Nevada, outskirts of that area. They do some really cool events, really cool off-roading events. You get to learn from a legend how off-road racing is done and rock crawling, different cool activities. So welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. So let's, I know you had a really exciting last year. Let's launch right into that. I don't know, maybe 6 weeks ago, I had a couple ladies on from Rebel Rally who were talking about before they came to the race and what their expectations were. But you were there. You did the race, right?
I did. I competed in all 7 days.
So how'd you find it? I mean, what was your experience?
It was such a different experience than anything I have ever done. And it was very nerve-wracking for me. I race competitively in the dirt regularly, but usually I have a whole team behind me, and we have a GPS, we have different electronics, and so coming into a competition where it's you as a driver and your navigator and your vehicle, and you have to get yourself 1,200 miles over 7 days, is a little bit nerve-wracking, and I had never done anything like that before, and so I didn't really know where to begin in prepping myself for it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But thankfully, I had an amazing navigator, Amy Lerner, who has competed in the Gazelle Rally multiple mm-hmm. times, and so she really had a great foundation and was a very amazing leader for our there myself. And then you get into it. And,
you just go.
And you just go, and you learn day by day, and, you know, the first day is a little rocky, and then the next day is a little bit less rocky, and then you just really start to meld with how the process is. So it was a really interesting process.
Now, have you read maps before? Have you done that with just a compass and a map? Have you ever done that navigation kind of stuff?
No.
No.
Not so, really. I mean, I've, you know, gone out camping and looked at maps, but never like that. So, that was a very foreign thing for me.
Right. So you're ready to drive. You're ready to go balls out, drive as fast as you can.
Right.
But you have to slow down and trust your navigator, and you have to work as a team. Now, did you have to, like, put your full trust in her and just go with it, or did you learn how the navigation worked? I mean, was there some stress? We'll use the word stress there.
There were a few moments of stress, but I don't think that they were bad stress by any means. And because I had no experience in reading the maps, I did put all of my trust into Amy. You know, she lived by that map every day. So she was constantly following our trail on the tiny little lines of the roads, you know, on the map. And so she really became one with the map. And so I just trusted that she knew where we were and we were making the right turn. So back to, yeah, it's completely different than desert racing. And so after the first day, I really had to be like, okay, Shelby, we're not going as fast as we can. We don't need to beat everyone else to the first corner. Like, just slow down, you know, really pay attention to be able to tell Amy, okay, we just passed a road on the left. You know, now I'm seeing a peak up ahead that looks like it might be the one you were describing. So it was really more taking in our surroundings than being the first one across the line.
Sure. So that's definitely a change for you. Did you grow up off-road racing? I mean, how far back?
I did, yes. So I would be a third-generation off-roader in my family. And, you know, my grandfather is really a legend in the industry. And I, you know, not to be biased, but I really feel like he had such a huge role in actually helping to get off-roading where it is today. And so him making off-roading a career was really incredible. Mm-hmm. And my father, who is Josh, has always been in the off-road industry as well. He's a racer, and he's more on the training side of things now. So I grew up eating dirt and playing with rocks and just being in the middle of everything because that's what our family did.
Yeah, that's kind of a far away from playing with Barbies and little dresses and little cupcake parties.
Well, that is true, although I did have a really sweet pair of pink velour cowgirl boots that was what I wore all the time.
There you
so
go.
Whether I was playing in the sagebrush or, you know, going to the ballet with my grandma, those pink cowgirl boots were what was up.
Now, do you have an adult pair of pink cowboy boots?
I don't.
What? I can't believe
I
it.
Don't.
So you got to wear those in your new position now. You've just, last year you told me you've taken over a spot with Rod Hall Drive. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it's so much fun. So Rod Hall Drive is really an off-road platform that we have created to take our passion and give it to people who maybe aren't so familiar with the off-road industry. So we offer corporate events and experiences, and then also custom events. So with the corporate events, it's really fun. We use our fleet of Jeep Wranglers and side-by-sides, and we put together really cool relationship-building tools. We can take people on adventure trips, so like guided tours throughout the area. And it just creates a really cool experience for people, even if they are familiar with four-wheeling. It just really gives them an opportunity to meet with racers. Our whole crew would be considered themselves off-road racers, so it's pretty interesting to be able to share what we love so much with people throughout the area.
Sure, and you probably get those city slickers that have a different appreciation of that area and off-road driving. I'm sure you have some wonderful stories you share afterwards.
Absolutely. Yes, I do. Actually, one of the coolest things that happened last year was, so the day that we crossed the finish line with the Rebel Rally, which was in Southern California, the next day we had an event. And okay. I was competing in one of our Jeep Wranglers. So I needed to cross the finish line, say my farewell, turn around, and drive 10 hours back home and be ready for an event the next day.
Oh, so, yeah. You know, easy task.
Yeah.
Easy. A few Red Bulls, you're there.
I've been driving 1,200 miles and then turn around and do 1,200 in a day. But anyways, so... basically, on my way to the event, I took the competition Jeep and just ran it through the car wash. And the group that we had actually ended up being a group of women. Oh. And so it was like just so inspiring for me to be able to say, oh my gosh, you guys, check out what I just did. This was a women's only event, the Rebel Rally, and I placed fourth. And now you guys get to drive that Jeep. And so that was just a really cool thing that these women had no idea really existed, and really felt, you know, they felt lucky to be able to drive this Jeep that was still in great shape thanks to our AEV conversions. The Jeep was phenomenal. So, yeah, so that was a really cool thing for me, and that will stick with me forever.
Yeah, and I wanted to get to that too. Women in off-road racing—it's kind of a new thing. Historically, when you look at off-road racing and women involved in off-road racing, is it true to say it hasn't been a male-dominated sport?
Oh, absolutely, and it still is. When I go out to compete, there's not even a handful of other women that are out there.
Really?
I think over the whole sport, there's definitely, it's increasing hugely, but I would say per event, we raced in the Baja 1000 in 2016, mm-hmm. and we were in the stock full class, and I was the only woman competing, and there were, I believe, 7 or 8 of us in the class. So it's not a huge class, but still not very many women. So I think that every woman should have the opportunity to get in a race truck and just go all out, because it is such a great feeling, and there's no reason that women shouldn't be in the sport.
Right, and at events like the Rebel Rally and the Gazelle, what's it, I think you call it the Gazelle Rally down in South America, I believe it is.
In Morocco.
In yep. Morocco, I'm sorry. Those events are really highlighting what women can do off-roading.
They do very much. So the Rebel Rally, which was here in the States, mirrored the Gazelle Rally. And the thing that's very empowering, I would say, about both events is, like I said before, when you're desert racing, you have a whole team behind you. You have a chase team that is meeting you at different checkpoints and checking the car over. And with both these women only, Rebel and Gazelle, you have no team. And so it's really up to just you and your one partner to take care of the vehicle, know how to diagnose the vehicle if something is going wrong. And that's just not a lot. Those things aren't normal things for women to learn growing up, or, you know, it's just not normal. So it's something that we really have to go out of our way to ask a lot of questions and do a lot of research and learn how to fend for ourselves mechanically.
Right.
And another thing that was really different for me was, and I know it's the same for both of the women-only events, is you camp every night. And you have to be able to carry all of your camping equipment and your clothing and your water containers and everything from your vehicle to your campsite. And I know when I go camping, my husband takes care of most of that. And, you know, and then I, of course, you know, I help. But
sure.
Generally, he's like the camp master. So, you know, being on your own and just going out there and setting your tent up, and whether it's 80 mile an hour winds or it's, you know, freezing out, you just put up with it. And I, at the end of it, I definitely felt a little bit tougher.
What do you find is the most interesting challenge? I'm assuming it's not really the driving. Was it the navigating, or was it the spending all the time out there by yourself and really, you know, being out there that the vehicle broke down, you had to figure it out?
So I would say that a very stressful event, or making sure you always know exactly where you are at.
Chance to go fast next year, though, right? 2017, you got some races coming up?
We do, yes. We are gearing up for the Mid 400, which we get to go as fast as we can. We will be competing in my grandfather's legendary Ford Bronco, which is the only four-wheel drive vehicle that's ever overhauled the Baja 1000. Very cool vehicle. We actually pulled it out of the Off-Road Motorsports Hall of Fame 2 years ago, and we totally restored it and started racing it down in Mexico. And you know, it rides pretty rough. It's very original.
Sure.
You know, 68 suspension. It's come a long way since then. So, and we're still keeping it as original as we can. So I'm really looking forward to that. I love that Bronco, and my husband is my co-driver, and he's the one that does all the work to the Bronco. So it's a really cool family experience. Rod is just, he's like a little kid when he gets in there. It's hard to pry him out of the driver's seat. So it's just a fun time for us. And
Yeah, it sounds great. I should ask, this was the Bronco. You've been paying attention to news, haven't you? The new Bronco's coming out in 2020?
Absolutely. Yes. And that's very exciting news for us. We definitely, my husband and I said, okay, well, I guess in 2020 we're getting a new car. So I will be very excited to see what it's actually going to look like. You know, over the last few years, there's been a lot of talk about a Bronco coming out and quite a few different body styles. So it'll be interesting to see the real thing. So I'm very excited about that.
Well, we wish you the best in the Mint 400. Hope you're going to do really well, and the Bronco's going to hold up really well. I know vintage vehicles, that's always somewhat of a challenge, but yeah, it should be fine. A little bit of starter fluid in there, it turns over every day.
Exactly. And you have to talk nice to her.
Oh, yes.
She's cold-blooded, so you just, you know, you got to really warm her up.
That's great. So make sure she stays warm. And you stay warm. We're right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. All right. Wasn't that a good interview? I really enjoyed that interview. Now it's time to talk about Swede. It's time to talk about Swede. So the other day, I'm driving home. I'd gone out to the farm, went some goose hunting, and came back. And I was driving along the interstate. And oil light came on. Oil pressure gauge came on. And this had been coming on and coming off. And I hadn't really done anything about it because I thought it was a faulty sensor. And I thought maybe it was heat related. I thought maybe it was heating up too much and there was an issue. I'm not really certain all the gauges work correctly. Well, I started losing power. And I'm talking lots of power. The speed limit was probably 60. I was probably going 40. And every time I'd come over a hill to go down a hill, lose momentum, I was going slower and slower and slower. Outside my house, I live by a national monument, and going up the hill there, I was probably doing 10 miles an hour, gas pedal all the way down. So I knew I had a problem. I was trying to limp home. I was only like a mile from the house, trying to limp home, and I pull around the driveway or the in the subdivision, and it dies. And I popped the hood, and it had a lot of heat. And so, you know, I'm thinking heat again. It's just heat was on my mind. Overheating was an issue in my head. And so I get a tow home. I let it sit all night, let it cool off. Next morning, I get up and I change the thermostat, which was a couple bucks. You know, the thermostats aren't that expensive. It was kind of cool. The old thermostat looks all nostalgic and it's like 50 years old. It's really a cool thing. It's going to stay in my bar. It's really cool. Anyways. So I throw the new thermostat in. I drive around the block. I let it idle for about 10 minutes, kind of checking the temperature, see if the temperature light comes on, see what the oil pressure light comes on, stuff like that. And I can hear a change in how it's idling. It starts idling not as high, starts idling really low and not as crisp as it normally idles. It was definitely a different idle. So I thought, huh. So I took it around my block, just around the subdivision, and it had no power at all, no guts, nothing. I mean, it was foot down in second gear, trying to get some speed going, trying to go in 15 miles an hour, could not do it. I mean, just had nothing. So I go to limp at home, and I get about home, and the oil pressure light comes on. And I hadn't even gone, oh, geez, not even a half mile. And so I get in the driveway, and I stop. And I said, okay. So I start calling around to my family and friends who've had old trucks like this and who are more experienced than I am, and talk to an uncle who's got a fleet. He's got a fleet of old vehicles. He works on these engines all the time. And his opinion was, I'm losing compression. Something's not happening to the engine. The engine's not firing right. Compression issue. So his point of view was, why don't you pull the oil pan and check out to see if there's some mud or some debris or something in the oil pump screen. So there's this oil pump that shoots oil back up to the top of the engine and keeps the engine oil circulating around through the engine. And on that, there's a screen. And the thinking was, is because Swede was parked so long in the barn for like 20 years or however long, 10 years, whatever long it was, that maybe there's some debris that got caught up in there. And so I pulled the oil pan off. After a day of frustrating, you have to lift the engine up. Yeah, to get the oil pan up, you got to lift the engine up like a half inch to an inch to clear the cross member. Stupid design. So anyways, I get the engine lifted up, which is a funny story. Side note, it's got three engine mounts, one in the front, two in the back. The first engine mount's got a bolt that goes straight down that you can look up from the bottom. You look up at it. That bolt that had no nut attached to it. Nope. Grandpa took it off sometime. You could just take that bolt and push it up and down. So I had literally nothing holding on the front of the engine. So I'm kind of glad I checked this anyways. But anyway, so I get the oil pan off. And the oil pan looks pretty good. Take the oil pump off. Or the screen off. Looks pretty good. And so the thinking then was, hey, order an oil pump. It's probably an oil pump. Probably the oil pump went bad. And so I did the natural thing, went on Facebook, talked about it. And I have some other friends, and they chimed in. And one of the friends said, why don't you pull one of those bearings off of that piston? It's the bottom of the piston. There's a bearing, and basically it holds the end of the crankshaft. And take that off and take a look at it. If it's silver and black, you're good. You know, it's had oil use. But if you're not oil, but oil's been in there pretty good. If it's copper looking, you've been starving for oil, which means you've been running low, which it's probably some more damage throughout the engine. So, okay, so I get out there and had to use my air compressor with my gun, whatever it was, I lost for alerts, impact drill. Had to take air impact, had to get into that, had to really break that loose. Finally, I get it loose. I get them both loose. And I have 110 pounds of pressure. It's just, these things are on there. They're torqued down. So I take it off and I look at it. It looks terrible. Oh, it looks terrible. The lining is orange. It's bright. It's, you can see the scar marks on it. You can see where the, on the side of the bearing, there's all these chunks that are not, they're just not chunks, but they're just things that are hit on the side of that. I mean, just the metal's been scarred from probably running out of oil and running on no oil. It does not look good at all. So I showed online, and now I created a what would you do kind of Facebook going on. I got everybody and their brother give me suggestions what they do. You know, I think the reality is people got all these different ideas. You know, they're like, throw an LS motor in there, throw a V8 in there, take the one, get it rebuilt, take the 235 inline six out, have it rebuilt, go get another 235, go buy a remanufactured one. It's the same. And so I'm getting a lot of different theories. I was talking to an uncle who used to work with the grandfather quite a bit, and he said that 235 in that truck had been overhauled a few times by grandpa, but he did the farmer's overhaul. He did the cheapest way he could to keep that truck going, because all he had to do was drive it from one barn to another. He didn't drive it very far. And so there's thinking now they did so much monkeying around with it that the block's no good. Well, I don't know. I don't know what the approach is at the moment. I do know that I have lots of people looking at different ideas. I'm thinking tomorrow I'm going to pull the head off just so I can look down into the cylinders and see what kind of shape the cylinders are in and kind of take an idea from the top down. I've taken lots of photos from the bottom up, but I haven't taken any photos from the top down. Again, you can see these photos on pickuptrucktalk.com. You can see that we have the project truck on the bottom of that page. You can see these photos of the lining of the bearing. So I think tomorrow I'm going to pull the head off just so I can see what's inside the cylinder and see what those are at. I'm going to just take a visual look and see what I can determine. What I figured out is I can get a full rebuild kit, like with pistons and cranks and everything. I mean, the whole nine yards, gaskets, the whole everything for about $790. And then I probably can get the block, take it to a machine shop and get it all tested and the cylinder walls cleaned out, stuff like that, if I need to go that far, for about $400. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm thinking that probably is the best approach because I have all the parts for the 235. I have the carburetor, I have the starter, I have, you know, I have a distributor. I have a lot of stuff that already for the engine seems like a swap would be the easiest way to go. But let me know your thoughts. Hit me up on tim@pickuptrucktalk.com. You can check me out on Facebook and leave me messages there. There's a post on our Facebook page. Tell me what you want to do. What would you do? I don't know. I did get a quote from a remanufactured 235 inline six from powertraindirect.com, and they wanted 2,000, which, I mean, that's what they wanted. So 2,000 for remanufactured or 1,200 for myself. And I have the time and I have the desire to take apart the engine. So maybe 1,200 is the way to go. I don't know. I'm just debating what to do. I've reached out through my industry contacts to see who's got engines out there. Maybe I can find an engine. Maybe somebody wants to test an engine out. Maybe I got a potential sponsorship here. Somebody wants to test an engine out and they want to have it sponsored, part of the show. I don't know. We'll see. I'm disappointed that I'm at this point already. I knew it was smoking and I knew I'd have to do something down the road. I just was hoping it was down the road. I didn't want to have it happen right now. And it did. So that's where we're at. That's the sweet update. It's not a good update, but I'm hopeful that I can get something resolved. Maybe by the summer, have it back up and running. So we'll see. I'll keep you in tune on what's going on. I'll let you know updates. Make sure you check us out on pickuptrucktalk.com. Check us out on Facebook on Pickup Truck Talk. Again, rodhalldrive.com. I forgot to say it earlier, rodhalldrive.com. On Twitter and then Instagram, it's either testradol or tim.estradol. I'm easy to find. Unique last name, you can find me, not a big deal. Email tim@pickuptrucktalk.com, and let me know on the show. Let me know your thoughts. Email them in. Let me give me some feedback, and we'll see you down the road.